Okay, big election Tuesday night, and unbelievable for many of us. As a liberal, it was kind of great to watch Karl Rove implode on Fox News on Tuesday night, and it was great to see a multicultural, multiracial, multi-ethnic audience cheering on the reelection of the President of the United States. And, you know, there's good and bad for everybody to find in this election. One of the things that was most interesting about it is that a person that I've supported for 14 years was not on the ballot. And that was Representative Jennifer Mann, a Democrat who's decided to move on in her career. And I have Jennifer Mann with me tonight. And Jennifer, welcome. I know you got into traffic along the way. You made it.
Made it just in time. Thank you for having me.
I usually, you know, if you got here at least a few minutes early, I could tell you what the questions were going to be. But because you just walked in, you're sort of stuck with what you get.
That's the risk we take. That's okay.
It is. But I'm not going to do anything that that you can't handle. Jennifer's biography is interesting. She first was elected at the ripe age of 28 years old. She rose through the ranks of the House leadership to become Democratic Caucus Secretary. Oddly enough, she's only the third woman to serve in a Pennsylvania House Democratic leadership position since the Pennsylvania legislature was formed in 1682. That's just unbelievable. Excuse me. You weren't around in 1682, were you?
No, I wasn't. Yeah. But a long time ago.
She started her career as a small business owner. She's a proud graduate of Allen High School. While she's been in the legislature, she was on the board of the Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency. She's served on some boards in the Lehigh Valley, including with me on the board of the new Allentown Neighborhood Improvement Zone Development Authority, which might not be there if it wasn't for Jennifer's own leadership effort in the House to get that the law that made that possible passed. She's a lifelong resident of Allentown. She comes out of a union household, and she's a graduate of Lehigh University, where I get to teach once in a while. So, Jen, I know you've been asked this question 1,000 times, but I know most people haven't really gotten a chance to hear you answer the question. Why did you get out?
Well, I think it's a very fair question, and one I've answered many, many times. So I'll take a few minutes because there's a number of things here. I think first and foremost, the opportunity to serve my hometown, the city of Allentown, in elected office was a lifelong and childhood dream of mine. And the greatest honor and privilege, and I will cherish those 14 years forever. I'm very, very grateful that I had an opportunity to serve my community and to make a difference, and I believe I have, and I'm very proud of that. And I think the more of us need to encourage more of that today, not just in young people,
especially,
but in people of all ages, how important it is to play a role and contribute to your community. That may or may not mean elected office. There are many ways in which you can volunteer and contribute. But one of the reasons that I ran was that my hometown was very important to me, and I believe in an obligation to others. Now, it starts with a personal responsibility, right? Individual responsibility. Some might argue that's where it ends. You take care of you, I take care of me, we're good. I would say that's the beginning, because we have an obligation and a stake in the well-being of others, in our friends and our family, and even in absolute strangers. That shows the true strength and well-being of your community, and that was important to me to be a part of that. When I had the opportunity to run, I never did so with an expectation of years of service. I did so more with the idea of meeting some goals and having an impact and making some changes to the city and to our commonwealth. And after 14 years, well, about a year ago this time, I kind of looked around and said, well, a lot of these things I hope to do are well on their way, and you've mentioned the NIS and really the unprecedented development in our downtown that is right now underway and happening. Said this to you the other night. I think we're hard-pressed to find any city in America of any size that has more than $500 million of development underway, particularly on three blocks that meet.
It's truly amazing.
It's just that unique and exciting, and we're very, very fortunate to have that happening in our city. And I'm very proud of the fact of having played a role in helping make that happen. There are a couple of factors that really played into my and weighed on my decision to move on. And among them are, it's very important to me to get things done, to accomplish things. And things have really come to a halt in government. People see that in Washington. I've certainly experienced that in Harrisburg. And we're quick oftentimes to blame that on divided partisanship. But I will tell you that politics by its nature is partisan. There are philosophical differences. But what I've seen happen in Harrisburg is a change from, okay, we have philosophical differences, but we also have an unspoken understanding and mutual agreement that we have an obligation to do things. There are challenges and issues that must be addressed. We have to do it. So what we're going to do is come together, compromise, and address them. We're going to do something. That's not the case now. There are a lot of folks who believe that there isn't a role for government and that we shouldn't do anything. So we have, for example, a transportation funding issue in the Commonwealth that has gone ignored for years. Our governor, when he was elected, put together his own transportation commission, put his own chosen Secretary of Transportation in charge of that commission. They came back with a report, a list of suggestions, and it's all been ignored. We can't continue to ignore these things. They're going to come back and haunt us. And when we have to address them, the price tag will be even more than it is now. A missed opportunity to take advantage of low interest rates, to take advantage of the fact that many projects still come in under bid because of the down economy. And materials are cheaper now than they will be as the economy turns around. So that's just one example and one sort of point of frustration. I mean, when I served my first 4 years where the Republicans controlled the House, the Senate, and the governor was Tom Ridge, we got a lot of things done. Now, granted, the economy was very different and stronger, certainly, than it is today. But I say it goes back to more of an understanding and commitment to doing, more so than a partisan nature or the economy. That probably is the biggest thing. Really wanting to be in a situation where I can have an impact and get things done, and a feeling that state government right now isn't the best place to be to do that.
You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, and my guest tonight, my only guest tonight, I usually have two or three, is Jennifer Mann, the former, or like still, but with only a month or so left in her term, state representative representing the city of Allentown, the 132nd district in Pennsylvania. Did you make a difference?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the good parts of the job oftentimes are real small things. And they're on a daily basis in a situation-by-situation case as people will call looking for help, come through our door. And it's always flattering to me when people come to us looking for help. And we've encountered all kinds of situations, from the mundane and sort of the silly. For example, a woman called years back, and her house was cold. She didn't pay her gas bill, but she had a fireplace, but asked if we had anybody who could come by and chop some wood for her. Well, we reached out. Well, we reached out to a Boy Scout troop and thought, well, maybe there's something they could do there. There are always folks who, unfortunately, have challenges, but they've created them. The person who wants their driver's license restored or reinstated, but they have 19 suspensions. There's not much we can do there. But there are some that are very serious. There's one I even mentioned in my farewell remarks on the House floor last month, and that was an elderly woman who was about to be evicted from her apartment. And she said to a member of my staff, "If only I had a car, at least I'd have some place I could go." Because she had no family and was really in a spot. Those are heart-wrenching stories. And and certainly representing a city and an inner city with certainly a high incidence of poverty, those aren't unique stories, ones like that elderly woman. And so you do all you can. You exhaust every outlet and opportunity, and certainly your organization, Community Action, has been a great partner of ours and a great resource and a place we have called over the years many, many times to help those who have come through our door or called us by phone. And we've been able to help them to find shelter, even if it's temporary, clothing, and direction. And sometimes just to know that somebody else cares goes a long way. We have had situations, and one of my frustrations, when we have situations with young adults who have disabilities, people may or may not realize this. If you have a child or have cared for somebody with a disability, you know this all too well. But all of a sudden, when they turn 21, we assume that they no longer qualify for the support and the benefits that they received up until then. What makes somebody more capable of caring for themselves at 21 versus 20 and 364 days, I don't know. But we've been involved many years, in many cases over the years, where we've been able to acquire a waiver to continue that help and support for those young people, young adults. So, you know, some of them are very simple like that, and because they strike a chord deep inside your core and at your heartstrings. But, you know, some of them are much larger. I've been a very strong advocate and believer for public education. It is a shame, but it remains a reality in this Commonwealth and around this country that the quality of your education and the opportunities afforded you depend on where you live.
Where you live, you're right.
It's your address. And sometimes it's as simple as which side of the street you live on.
Yep.
And that is something I have fought very hard for, been very, very successful. And I want to be very, very careful because I'm proud of the effort I've made, but I don't ever want anyone to think I believe I alone did any of these things. It's the help of staff. It's people in the community. It's colleagues. One of the biggest partnerships and important partnerships I've had is with Senator Pat Brown and our work on public education, securing additional dollars for the school district in the city of Allentown. He and I worked very well with former Governor Ed Rendell. And Governor Rendell really made public education and public education funding a priority of his time in office. Pat and I worked together on a costing out study in which we were able to identify how much it should cost to educate a child in Pennsylvania, regardless of their address. And we really made some great strides and began working towards fulfilling those dollars and got additional money for Allentown.
All of which was wiped out by Governor Corbett?
Rather quickly. We were able in this last budget to sustain some of those dollars, but that's a disappointment. But we've worked together on that, and that's important. And obviously, you mentioned I'm often referenced Coca-Cola Park. That was about 7 years to bring minor league baseball to the city of Allentown. And any time you have a project that's worthwhile, it takes a lot of time. But you also deal with a lot of naysayers and doubters. And I think many of us today would wonder how differently the Lehigh Valley would be without that team, without that ballpark. And what a great meeting place it is for people of all types to come together on a regular basis to see each other, to spend time, to catch up, and to take their families to somewhere that's safe and affordable. I love it. I enjoy it, and I know a lot of other folks do. And we're going to do something with much greater impact on our downtown with this redevelopment project. It's unprecedented. I think it's very hard for the general public to really understand the magnitude of this, the transforming impact this will have.
City skyline is going to look different in about a year.
Just something as simple as an 11-story office building.
You bet.
If we Googled 11-story office buildings, I bet you outside of Manhattan there aren't too many of those being built right now, and it's happening in our city, in my hometown. And I know that the work that I've done will have a long-standing impact.
Is there anything you would have done differently?
Wow. You know, it may sound kind of crazy, but I would say I would have just kind of enjoyed it more. Mm. I think I am a bit of a classic overachiever and always looking at what's next and what's the next project? What do we do?
You're pretty intense, too. You know that.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. So there's really not that sort of stop and smell the roses part of it. To me, in the job, it's not that I don't know how to have fun. I think a lot of people could point to examples of that. But I would say more just kind of enjoy the job a little bit, particularly in those early years. But the camaraderie, the relationships, the people I've gotten to know is really a blessing that few people get to receive. But where we all are often so cynical about our community, when you have the opportunity to be involved and engaged in so much of what happens, I'm also aware of how many people work so hard to make a difference in the community, whether it's people like you working at community action and standing up for those who oftentimes are shunned, have no voice, or don't know where to go with their concerns, or it's economic development agencies, people that work in our hospitals, for nonprofit organizations, in our schools, educators, volunteers, folks that work at the library and the dedication there. None of these things happen. No good thing happens by accident. It's the hard work and commitment of a lot of people. And we're blessed with a lot of good, dedicated people in the Lehigh Valley. And I don't think that is celebrated or recognized often enough.
I'd ask you about an unfinished agenda, but my guess is that, I don't know how you feel, but my feeling is that there's just so much that needs to be done and so little progress that we seem to be making anymore, which I guess is part of your point earlier about why you're leaving. But if you were sticking around, would you have one or two legislative priorities?
I think we have to continue to focus on education. I also have a concern that there's been movement in the last two years to move away from funding higher ed in Pennsylvania. Our state system has seen cuts. The state-assisted universities have seen cuts. And the price of higher ed in this country, and certainly in the Commonwealth, is only continuing to go up. It's gone up in the last couple of decades at a much faster pace than inflation. Pennsylvania has among the most expensive colleges and universities in the country, and particularly our state universities and our state assisted. And if we take away the affordability of that, we weaken our opportunity to compete. We weaken our position to retain and attract good paying businesses if we don't have a well-skilled and well-trained workforce. So that is one area.
We're going to take a short break. You're listening to the Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings, and my guest tonight, outgoing, retiring, State Representative Jennifer Mann. Stay with us.
Distance in your eyes. Celtic Fair, a celebration of Celtic music and culture from its roots in Ireland, Scotland, Wales, Galicia, and Brittany to its branches in Australia, Cape Breton, Canada, Chicago, New York, Philadelphia, and the Lehigh Valley. Bringing you music, interviews, and a weekly culture calendar every Thursday from 7 to 9 on WDIY Allentown listener-supported community public radio.
Never can say goodbye. No, 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 no. Never can say goodbye. Even though the pain and heartache seem to follow me wherever I go, though I tried to hide my feelings, they always seem to show. Then you try to say you're leaving me, and I always have to say no. Tell me why. Is it so that I never can say goodbye?
We're back, WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I've got Jennifer Mann in the studio with me, the one and only guest tonight. Jennifer has hung up her cleats and is moving on. We've got a lot to talk about with Jen. It was funny, I said that you're intense. Just a few nights ago, I think I pulled into the intersection too fast, and Jen was waiting at the other side of the four-way stop. And the scowl I got from Jen, because I know that I thought, yeah, that's my friend Jennifer Mann. She is a tough
Well, you know, one of my pet peeves in a city is we always have a lot of people guilty of the old California stop at the intersections. Maybe I take my policing role too seriously.
I sent her a text and said, "Oh my gosh, sorry about that one." Let's I've been doing this a little bit longer than you have. I've been through when I was started this work, Dick Thornburgh was governor, and I could give you my opinion of each of them along the way. You've worked for, I think, this is your third. I think you came into office when Tom Ridge was beginning his second term.
Well, technically four because of
Schweiker. Okay. And then and so Tom Ridge leaves, goes to the Bush administration. Mark Schweiker comes in for a brief interlude. Then 8 years of a much very activist governor in the form of Ed Rendell, and now you've got Tom Corbett. I've spent the last whatever it's been now 2 years, just complaining constantly about this governor's policies, and I'm just wondering, what your experience has been, what your opinion is. Is it likely that this might be the first one-term governor? And because he's obviously in the polls very unpopular and probably is overreached. Do you think he'll back off? What's your assessment of this governor?
Well, I go back to something I said at the beginning. I mean, it certainly has been a frustrating time because there are issues that need to be addressed. And before the break, I had mentioned my concern about funding of higher ed and the lack of affordability for Pennsylvanians to advance their education. I have concerns about the transportation issue. There's an issue that's gone ignored for the last few years. And again, a significant opportunity to put Pennsylvanians to work and to address public safety issues. The reality is when you're detoured because roads are closed, if roads aren't properly maintained, if bridges are out, you're already paying. You're paying in higher gas costs. You're paying in additional repairs and wear and tear on your car, all of these things. And it, to me, seems a bit short-sighted. I think we have an opportunity to make targeted investments in Pennsylvania to create a more economic friendly environment for businesses, not only to stay here, but to come on in. And so that is frustrating. I think when we look at the budget, and we all understand this tough economy, but when we look at the budget, we are spending less today than we did 5 years ago. And that reality, it translates to some very critical programs being eliminated. Those programs affect real people. And unfortunately, when you make those cuts, they affect those who can least afford to be without those supports that they had. We're talking about the disabled. We're talking about the elderly, young children that are disabled or are orphaned, the blind, people that are wheelchair bound. I think that is disappointing to me. I think that's not acceptable. It's unforgivable, because when the support and help that government provides, so many of us go through our lives and we're blessed to the extent that we are not dependent. We don't have to call on those programs and supports. So if there are cuts to the budget, we may not realize it. But the people who are most dependent realize it first. And it takes a while till those cuts, when you keep cutting and cutting, till it reaches folks like you and me. And we're at that point. People are seeing real changes in what's happening in our schools, what's happening in our communities, how that gets transferred to our local municipalities and results in restraints at the county level, the local municipal level, and results in a cut in vital services. As I said earlier, we all have a stake in the well-being of each other. So cuts that are hurtful to others are hurtful on the whole community and the greater good. So that I think is short-sighted. And I will say this: this is not a partisan observation. I spent time with the Republican Senate Appropriations Chairman, to whom I'm related.
And really?
Yes, and he will tell you that. There's nothing left on the bone to cut. There's certainly the fat was cut long ago. We've cut meat, and we've got a real challenge ahead. This is going to be a very difficult budget. In addition to recognizing that there is nowhere else to cut, we have a significant pension issue staring down the road, and the next legislature that will be sworn in January 1st. Will have a very challenging budget year on their hands.
I want to just take a quick minute to thank my partner over there at the equipment, Ray Schwab, who's been here week after week or month after month helping me get through these shows. Ray, thanks as always for your selfless volunteer work and keeping me from looking too stupid or sounding too stupid. I to talk a minute about your experiences with colleagues who got in trouble. I believe in government. You know, I believe in democracy. I believe in collective goodwill. And I hate it when people who are entrusted with responsibility to serve others and, you know, whether it's the church or it's a state university, the Boy Scouts more recently, or it's state legislators. I got to tell you, I was always appalled by Vince Fumo's behavior. You know, he was a Democrat. I didn't care. His behavior was frankly scandalous. Mike Vion got himself into trouble. Bill DeWeese. You had to work with these guys. While they're in trouble and while they're getting looked at, they're also in leadership positions. How do you, as a clean, I mean, you never had a DUI. I mean, I don't even remember you ever getting in trouble in any way whatsoever. You're pretty straight, clean, legislator. How did you deal with those issues?
Yeah, first of all, I completely agree with you. When you're put in a position of elected office, you're entrusted with a great authority, and it's a privilege to have that opportunity, and it's a delicate thing. People have given you something. They've given you their trust. You have this obligation, responsibility, and it's something I've always taken very seriously. I don't take it for granted. It really is a privilege. It's a gift, and I never wanted to disappoint the people that gave me that opportunity. I certainly had my frustrations over the years by how some folks chose to utilize their authority, very much a top-down. This is a very inside and limited opportunity, and we control sort of the cookie jar, and we'll tell you who gets the cookies. And you see where it got them. I think, unfortunately, some people lose sight of why they're there, who put them there, and it becomes more about themselves, and they get a taste of power, they get a taste of being in control, and it becomes more about obtaining more power, hanging on to dear life to the power that you have, and the lines become very unclear. What may be, sort of a glowing yellow line to you and me, all of a sudden gets kind of dim, and they cross it, and no one notices, and they think they can get away with it. And unfortunately, you saw several examples of that. If you ever asked me in my life if I would know so many people that are in state prison at one time, I would have said, I would have chuckled at it, to be honest. But right now, there are a lot of people serving time in state prisons across this Commonwealth with whom I worked. And the thing that frustrates me the most about that, Alan, is that most of the people that serve in elected office are good. They're there for the right reasons. You and I, we might not like them. We might not agree with them. But they're there trying to do a good thing. They're there for the right reasons. And when you have these examples, and particularly what we experienced in Pennsylvania over the span of a few years, what we witnessed was a multitude of people behaving badly and breaking the law. And the consequence of that goes on for years because it adds on top of an existing cynicism,
right,
and distrust in government. And that angers me more than anything, because like you, I believe in government. I believe in the role of government. I'm proud of Pennsylvania. I'm proud of this country. And what makes our country unique is our form of government. And when people taint that, there's a greater harm there that's way beyond their poor decisions and an immediate negative impact. It's long-standing. It discourages people from voting. It discourages people from having trust in those that they entrust to elected office. And it discourages our young people for saying they ever want to do that. I think it's tougher now than ever to convince people to put their name on a ballot, regardless of which office. I think it's tougher now than ever.
How do you then, let me just say this and hope that I don't make you mad. Because this is the institution in which you worked for 14 years, and you found your way into a leadership position. I'm guessing you worked your tail off into a leadership position. And being in a leadership position means you have to be, especially careful to not get sucked in to the gross kind of arrogance that so often seems to come with it, while at the same time, and stay clean, but use that position of power. So, my impression of the state legislature is that it's basically a corrupt body because of the way the leadership clings to such consolidated power, rendering most members of the legislature relatively, inconsequential when it comes to the really key decisions, like the budget, most importantly. And constituent service becomes the most important thing a legislator can do because the leadership isn't really giving members the opportunity to do the kinds of things that they really want to do. Is that unfair?
I think that that was a more accurate assessment several years ago. What has changed is, and I think the fact that I was able to be elected into leadership was a part of that transition. One of the reasons I believe that I won the trust of my colleagues for them putting me in a position of leadership was that independence, was being able to separate myself and differentiate myself from what was happening, to not be involved in that, and to stand my own ground and to stand up to it. If we had Bill DeWeese, for example, here, he'll tell you many stories of our very direct conversations. I did not hold back any punches when I thought things weren't being done the way they ought to be, in a more open way, providing more opportunities for more members. So I think by the time I was elected to leadership, the winds of change had blown in, and it has become a much more open process where rank-and-file members have much more say and much more influence in the process, the positions the caucus takes, and the decisions that the caucus makes.
That's encouraging. You're listening to WDIY. If you're hearing a familiar voice, it is that of outgoing state representative, Representative Jennifer Mann, who is giving up her seat in the state legislature after 14 years. And Jen, we only have a few minutes before the next break. 2012's election, our national lobbyist said this morning, and talking about the national election, that it probably was about as good an outcome as could happen, that the right Republicans won, the right candidate won at the top of the ticket. What's your assessment of what happened on Tuesday night?
Well, I'll be honest. When I woke up or went to bed the night before the election, I was really unsure of what the outcome was going to be in the presidential race. I thought there were definitely that the president had picked up momentum in the last few weeks. I think the superstorm Sandy is not to bring it down to that alone, but I think it gave him an opportunity to show leadership, to work across the aisle, and show that when times get tough, Americans come together. And he showed us how he could rise to that occasion, unlike I've seen him do in the 4 years that he's been in office. I think there's just some sign of a little bit of pushback. I think that the American electorate is frustrated as well. They want to see things get done in Washington. The adherence to government doing nothing, which is more or less the mantra of the Tea Party, right. If we starve government, it will fail.
Right.
It will not
meet its
mission.
And if it fails,
mission.
Then we don't have to fund it anymore, and it's all self-fulfilling.
Well, and there's some, and I shake my head because, again, anybody that wakes up in this country and breathes is dependent on government somehow, some way, in the most simple things. Getting from Allentown to this studio tonight, I trusted there would be safe roads to get me here and traffic signals and stop signs and things that would keep me safe along the way. We're all dependent on those things. It's so ridiculous to me that anybody could adhere to such an extreme ideology. This is not about ideology. This is about governance. It's about people, and it's about moving the country forward. And the statement that I take away from the outcome of Tuesday was that the American people want people in office who are reasonable, who are rational, and who understand their obligation to deliver, to address the needs in this country, and to do something about it.
You listen to Representative Jennifer Mann, retiring from the state legislature after 14 years. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. We're going to take a short break. Stick around.
And my time was running wild, a million dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me, but I've never caught a glimpse of how the others must see the faker.
I'm much too fast to take that test. Changes.
Turn and face the strain.
Changes.
For program support on WDIY, we thank Touchstone Theater on Bethlehem's South Side, presenting Going Green the Wong Way. Created and performed by Christina Wong, this true life adventure takes us from Christina's confrontational sixth grade science project to her wandering years as a missionary of recycling to her true calling as Los Angeles's patron martyr of carbon-free living. November 16th and 17th. For tickets and information, 610-867-1689 or touchstone.org.
Nothing without a woman or a girl. You see,
I hate that song, but it certainly is a good segue into the next question. You know, what were the politics of being a woman in the Pennsylvania legislature? You know, there aren't a lot of women serving. You know, there's no reason for it. You know, I think testosterone is like an evil substance that causes aggression and anger and dominance and violence. And I think we'd be all better off if, you know, there was a woman in the White House and a woman in the governor's office and women in the majority in the state legislature. How did you deal with the politics of being a woman in the Pennsylvania state legislature?
Well, you might not be surprised to hear me say that I've been asked that many times over the years and been asked to participate in forums and panels with whether it's Girl Scouts or women college students, whether it's newspaper, someone's writing a magazine article or a newspaper article, a TV spot. Often that question has been asked of me. The truth of the matter is it's a tough place for women, and it is certainly a male-dominated world. But having said all that, the way I've always approached it is rather than talk about the disparity, the double standard, the ways in which it's more difficult to raise
the
money,
glass ceiling,
all of those things, which exist and are true and we know it. If we spend our time and that's all we talk about, what most people do, even women, is they just tune you out. So, yeah, there's that whiner. There she's talking about how it's unfair for women and tougher for women. And I think you do yourself and other women a disservice. What I've always said and what I've always tried to do is just do my job the best I can and do it better than those guys that I served with. And if you do that, I hope by doing that bit by bit, you start to change the way people think. And we start to think about this as a competent, capable human being. And we don't start to label whether it's gender or race or sexual orientation for that matter, but we look at somebody as a human being and for their value and their character and the quality, what they bring to the table and the job they do. One thing that's unique about serving in the State House is at least I was in one situation where the salary meets the job.
Yeah.
Right? Because we know
they can't discriminate against you on your salary.
No, they can't. You get paid the same as the men.
That's a good point.
It's
and
one
you get
of
the same
unique,
cars. And
same, one of those unique situations where the compensation is the same. But what I've tried to say that to young women is go out there and do it well and do it better. And one by one, we're going to change the way people think, and not just men, but women too, and change the way that they think. And little by little, we're going to make it easier for those that are behind us. And I think that is the best way that I could have handled myself and the approach that I had always taken.
What are the, do you know off the top of your head what the numbers are these days in the legislature, women for members? There's 203 members in the House. Do you have any idea? Is it more than 30?
I think we're about 30.
Yeah.
Now, after this election, I'm not sure. But I think it's about, I think it's around 30. Interestingly, you mentioned earlier how the legislature was formed, first legislative body in this country, 1682, and how I am serving as only the third woman in House Democratic leadership in that long history. Well, there have been over 11,000 men that have served in the Pennsylvania legislature in that time.
Wow.
And just over 200 women. I forget which number I am. It's two in the teens, 213 or 210, somewhere in there. But that's the disparity.
And the leadership, I mean, let's just go through this. In the Senate side, there is the president pro tem, the majority leader, the majority whip. They're all men, majority whip being our own Pat Brown. Do you know the rest of the leadership going down through there? Are there any women in the Senate Republican leadership?
Jane Orie was in Senate Republican leadership.
Not Earl.
No, Jane Orie, but she's in jail.
Yes.
You just shake your head. So having said that, I don't believe that the House Republicans have a woman in their leadership right now. The Senate Democrats do. Elisa Pascola is the Senate Democratic policy chair.
Okay.
So there is one. The frustrating thing is, when will there be two?
Yeah.
It's the sort of that, if we have the woman covered, so we're good. But that there certainly is room for improvement.
Did it change over your 14 years? Did it get better? I mean, even if the numbers didn't improve a lot, I mean, were they not telling, jokes they shouldn't have been telling and not have, was there any sign of improvement from your perspective over those 14 years?
Well, I will say from a numbers standpoint, it hasn't changed much. It's fluctuated, but it hasn't changed much. Have attitudes and behaviors changed? I would say they have. Not significantly, marginally. I think people are much more cognizant of what they say and certain behaviors. But human beings are slow to change, dare we say resistant to change. But I think there's been progress, Alan. Not as much as you or I would like to see, but there's been progress.
Am I making you feel old? Because I'm treating you like this wise sage, and you're all of what, 42 years old?
Well, here's the good news. You refer to retirement, and I always tell people I'm too broke and too young to retire. It's just time to move on and to a new way to earn a living. But 14 years is, in many ways, I think being in the legislature, it seemed a lot longer because it's a very demanding schedule, and you deal with so many people, so many issues over time, and it's a very full schedule. It's a very hectic schedule.
One of your former staff people has now taken your seat. Another former staff person is a likely shot at a seat when the redistricting is completed. We're talking about Mike Schlossberg, who has just come in to we really didn't have much of an election fight. And then Pete Schweier, who's a city council member in Allentown, works now for Sacred Heart Hospital. And I think everybody expects he'll be in the state legislature as well. Are they wins for you? Do you see yourself as being, helping their careers along? I would certainly hope so.
One of the neatest things in this business, one of the things that made it really a lot of fun along the way, is the people you get to go to work with. It can be a nasty business. It can be grueling. And you want to surround yourself with smart, honest, trustworthy people. And I've been very fortunate over the years with my district office staff to have served with very dedicated, hardworking people. They are on the front lines. They're doing that grunt work day in and day out, and in many instances made me look good. Pete and Mike are two examples of that, and I'm very proud of both of them. We've spent a lot of time together, and to me, it's the greatest compliment in the world that they could go out and serve the community and do a good job in doing so. And I have every faith and confidence in both of them. And
Jan and Eileen have been great staff people. Loyal.
Jean and Eileen and were there. Craig Rogan many years ago. Jean Creedon, Eileen Tremblay, Jeff Brace is there now. Just a great team. And I certainly would not be where I am without them. And really their dedication and loyalty. This business, as I said, you got to have people in that foxhole with you.
You always got to watch over
and,
your shoulder.
And they've always been there for me. I've been very, very blessed. But I think when you focus on mentoring and working with those around you, again, I believe in this commitment to the greater good and public service. One of the greatest things I can do is to continue to work and mentor and encourage younger people to follow in my footsteps in that way. And to serve in elected office and go out there and do some good things. Because as we've discussed here tonight, our community needs good leaders. There certainly is no shortage of challenges to address. And we have to continue to encourage that and nurture those people who show that desire and willingness.
Speaking of the people you worked with, are you willing at this point in time to kind of go out on a limb and say who the people are that you most respected, people that really inspired you as colleagues in the legislature? And then, of course, the converse of it, which is, you know, are the people, anybody that you just could not stand dealing with and working with?
Well, one thing I'll say, I've been blessed to work with a really great delegation.
Lehigh Valley.
The Lehigh Valley delegation.
It's true.
We have always had a reputation in Harrisburg for working in a bipartisan way.
Yep.
For putting parochial issues aside and working on the greater good. They're a very smart, talented group. And I think, you know, sort of the professor of us all and our leader has always been Bob Freeman. Bob's the most senior member of our delegation. He is an absolute gentleman, professional, a great public servant, as honest as
tactful.
Anyone could be. You know, you want to talk about keeping your nose clean, and there's a guy who just knows how to do it, very knowledgeable and dedicated. And I think anyone that models their public service after him will serve very, very well and be successful. I would say, yeah, I had a very great, good relationship very early on with Matt Ryan, who was the Speaker of the House, a Republican
side.
From Delaware County, who really showed what it was to be a statesman. To think of the greater good and put the institution first, and he was a deal maker. He knew about that obligation and responsibility to govern. If he could get the deal to look more like he wanted to, sure, he was going to go for that and do everything he could. But when it was said and done, it was about compromise. It was about the institution doing its work of meeting the needs of the people who elected us to be there. And I always respected and appreciated that in Matt. If there's anybody that I sort of had a disdain for, I don't know that there's any individual that I would name by name, but I would simply say that it's those who are more concerned with an ideological agenda, their own agenda, their philosophic agenda, and are obstructionists to getting things done. I don't believe that's why we're elected. We're there to address the needs of the people, and people who want to put their own agendas and own needs or own egos in place of the greater good, I don't have a use for it. And if the listeners want to know who I might be referencing, just watch PCN a night or two, and you'll see them pontificate at the mic time and again. You probably know who some of them are.
Okay, so what are you doing next?
Well, it's time for me to return to the private sector. I've been a small business person my entire life, and
you're not going to work for the toll commission or turnpike.
I'm not. but what I am doing is I will have an announcement coming next week as to what I will be doing and launching a business of my own, and there'll be some more details about that. So I'm very excited about that. As I said, a return to the private sector, a return to my entrepreneurial roots, and an opportunity to remain here in the Valley and continue to be a part of the things and organizations that have been important to me. I can assure you that a year ago when I made my announcement to not seek re-election, it was not based upon giving up on the things that matter to me. It was just a recognition that it's time to participate and contribute to those causes wearing a different hat. And I'm looking forward to it.
You're on several boards of directors. My guess is that you'll get plenty of invitations to serve in other situations. My advice is to you is to sit back and wait and make sure you get the array of offers before you pick any of them, because you pick the first one that comes along, you'll be sorry when the better one comes along and you've got all of your time taken from you.
Well, and I think the challenge, too, is to you get into a new routine. You need to really have a firm understanding of availability. And I've never been one to throw my name on a board and not participate. I don't think that helps the cause or anybody. But I know we're almost out of time, and I just want to take a moment to thank you for your friendship, for your commitment and dedication to our community, to those who often don't have a voice, who are often forgotten. You've always been there, and I'll never forget that first breakfast we had at Ham Fam, where you made very clear to me that if I ever forgot those people, you would hound me forever. It was very, very.
I haven't had to.
It was very clear from the outset, and I will say, long before there was the meltdown on Wall Street, long before people understood subprime mortgages and those bad bundled packages, you and I were sitting in a home on North 6th Street in the city of Allentown, talking to somebody who had been victimized by a subprime mortgage and a house that was appraised well above what it was worth, a mortgage at an interest rate without so high they could hardly make the payments, a loan that they couldn't get out of because of a prepayment penalty. And we were there, and I'm going to guess that was a good 10 years ago.
Right.
But you have always been on the cusp of what is happening out there and how people are being harmed by those who want to take advantage of others. And I've always respected you for that and look forward to continuing to serve with you on the ANISDA board and in other aspects in our community. So thank you, Alan.
Geez, I don't know. Ray, how do I respond to that, man? I don't think I've ever had anybody say such a nice thing. What do I do with this? How do I end the show, man? You're in charge, aren't you?
Yeah, I think you just have to know how to take a compliment, Alan.
That
was a pretty good.
I'm so used to being attacked and vilified and called an evil false prophet and told I should be burned at the stake. Jen, I really appreciate that. I just want you to know that I sent a blast out saying that you were going to be on the show, and you know, a quick, you know, responses from people saying, you know, ask her what she's going to run for next. And a few different people said, please talk her into running for county executive. And it sounds to me like that's the last thing on your mind for now, even though county executive would be a really, really good idea.
Well, I'm flattered by that, and I appreciate the suggestion. But your guess is accurate. It's really time for me to move on to something else. My time in public office is over. I'm not naive enough to say never again, because we all change and things change. But that's not something I foresee down the road. But it's certainly not in the cards in the immediate future.
That's the last word from Representative Jennifer Mann on this show. Jennifer is surely going to be a leader in this community for many years to come. Jen, thanks so much for joining me tonight.
Thanks, Alan.
Thanks for your selfless service for many, many years. Thanks for listening. WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. Try us again next month. There are places